Imagine you finally have a free day out on the town. You're about to enjoy a nice lunch when you get the alert that a window's been broken at home and you're miles away. These are the wake-up calls that remind us, in 1 second, everything can change. ADT security systems are built for those moments. They help keep your home safer with 24/7 monitoring. No one wants to feel unsafe at home or vulnerable when you're away. And with ADT, you won't. Their systems are professionally installed by trained technicians, so you can trust them to watch out for your home from day one. ADT has the most company-operated monitoring centers in the industry, and the ADT Plus app lets you keep tabs on your home from anywhere you have service. You'll get the alerts that matter about your home safety. Don't wait to prepare your home for an emergency. When every second counts, count on ADT. Visit ADT.com. That's ADT.com. Or call 1-800-ADT-ASAP. That's 1-800-ADT-ASAP.
It's Charles Barkley here with Wayfair. And let me tell you, game day is serious business at my house. If I'm grilling, chilling, and watching hoops, my outdoor setup better be ready to play. That's where Wayfair wins. From patio seating and umbrellas to grills and grill accessories, Wayfair's got it all. And it shows up fast. I'm talking fast and easy delivery. So level up your grill game and your outdoor chill game. And head to Wayfair.com to get your outdoor space ready for the season.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Parles-tu français?
Hablas español?
Parle italiano.
If you've used Babbel, you would. Babbel's conversation-based technique teaches you useful words and phrases to get you speaking quickly about the things you actually talk about in the real world. With lessons handcrafted by over 200 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, Babbel is like having a private tutor in your pocket. Start speaking with Babbel today. Get up to 55% off your Babbel subscription right now at babbel.com/listen. Spelled babbel.com/listen. Rules and restrictions may apply.
What's going on, everybody, and good morning. Today is Thursday, June 18th, and this is your daily Go Birds Morning Update, giving you all the Eagles news you need to know, as well as what to keep an eye out for today. Happy Thursday. I hope you all had a great Wednesday. We're officially halfway through the week. Not a lot of great World Cup games today. Really, tomorrow, we get the main course. We get USA and Brazil. It's going to be fun. It's going to be hopefully good games. I mean, it'll be tough for USA to play as well as they did in that first game, but I'm excited to be around the stadium on Friday night. Haven't been able to get tickets to the game, so hook your boy up if you can. Kidding, also not kidding. But it will be awesome. So very excited for Friday, but we still got Thursday to get through, but that's okay because we got a lot of fun things on the slate for this pod today. There was a big article in the Inquirer about Julian Lurie. We will talk about that. The Eagles made a few roster moves and slightly, you know, kind of concerning trend developing with some of the things that are with the veterans they're signing. And then I finally did research on something I've been kind of curious about. And I don't think actually the research turned out very well for the Eagles, but I think it's interesting. So let's get into it. As always, go check out Go Birds Insiders. The link is in the podcast description. Come hang out. Come get the daily email. Come get exclusive pods. It'd be awesome to be a Go Birds Insider. It's kind of like being an auto downloader, only maybe a little bit cooler. I don't want to say definitely cooler, but it certainly is in that category. So go check out Go Birds Insider in the podcast description. All right. So let's start with a few roster moves the Eagles made, one of which we talked about yesterday, but they went and added somebody else after I had already recorded the daily pod. And no offense to Sean Wade, didn't feel worthy of an emergency pod. So the team has signed wide receiver Eric Ezukamu, I believe is how it's pronounced, from the UFL. And then they also signed cornerback Sean Wade from the UFL. So two guys that will come in, try to make the practice squad, and hopefully it gets to a point where we're talking about them in depth, because that means they've played well, or hopefully it doesn't, because that means the roster has completely fallen apart and they got backups in there. So we'll talk about them as they warrant it. But the weird part about this is, so Joe Tryon retired yesterday. He was added to the retirement list by the Eagles. And look, I wish him nothing but the best. Hope, however he decided to retire, I hope he has a good life post-football. He's made good money. He was a first-round pick, so hopefully he's able to live a long, glorious life. But what's interesting is, so in addition to Joe Tryon, they also waived Brandon Johnson. My guess is he'll be back at one point. But Joe Tryon is now one of five players that they've signed since 2023 that were veterans that just retired after coming to the Eagles. So I think if it happens once, it's kind of it's like a funny story. If it happens twice, it's like, oh, that's interesting. Five times is wild. So Miles Jack, the linebacker they signed in 2023, retired when he got to the Eagles. I think actually came out of retirement later to play for the Steelers, but retired when he got to the Eagles. Devontae Parker retired when he got to the Eagles in 2024. Missed a ring because of that, so bad call by him. Za'Darius Smith, obviously they trade from last year. He retires. They trade for Jaire Alexander last year. He retires. And now Joe Tryon, they signed this offseason, and he's retired. So here are my thoughts on this. I think that as much as maybe people just want to kind of explain it away as like a funny thing, you do wonder what the pro personnel scouts are doing, or they need to do better to better identify players that aren't on the verge of retirement that they're signing. Like Miles Jack, Devontae Parker, Za'Darius Smith, Jaire Alexander, and Joe Tryon all retiring. That is a bit of a, that's like a trend, right? So if you're on the pro scouting department, if you're the one in charge, like Joe Douglas and those type of guys, Howie Roseman, obviously, on bringing in players that are veterans that you want to hope are lottery tickets, where like you sign them for not a lot of money and maybe they hit and you end up getting better production than their money, maybe they need to kind of rework how they're figuring out who still has love for the game of football. Like that's such a big thing with the Eagles. Nick Sirianni talks about it quite a bit. So five guys retiring as soon as they get to the facility, I don't think it is a slight at the culture, anything like that. I don't think they're getting here and hating it. They're also not getting here and loving it to the point where they're falling back in love with football. Now, Jaire Alexander, there was a medical thing, right? Like he just couldn't run like he used to. But even with Jaire, they clearly got bad information about how healthy this guy is, right? When they made the trade. So yeah, it's just something I feel like they probably need to have a meeting about. I don't think it's impacting the roster in any major way, but Za'Darius Smith, they lost him as an edge rusher when he was playing pretty well. Their solution at corner to try to solve in season was Jaire Alexander. That didn't work out. So I think that it is something they need to work on for sure. Not a good trend that's developing with the Eagles. All right, so there was a big story in the Inquirer on Wednesday from Jeff McClain about Julian Lurie and his role with the team. So an awesome read. You should definitely go check it out. I think it says in there they spent several months on the story, so it's a very deep dive. I'm not going to be able to touch on everything in there. But I did want to talk about my thoughts on the article overall. And then later today, I'm doing a pod with James. I'm sure we'll talk about it as well. So the first kind of thought is that it's very obvious Julian is very involved. Like if you haven't had a chance to read it and don't plan on reading it, that's really the main takeaway. Julian Lurie, Jeffrey Lurie's son, is very involved, like in all facets of the team. Now, it seems like he's very into like the social media and videos, which we'll talk about in a second, but he sits in on player personnel meetings. He sits in on coaching meetings. He gives advice or thoughts to the coaches about what they should be doing. And I'm not trying to say that he's like being overstepping his boundaries. What I'm saying is every little thing that's happening with this team, it feels like he is in a meeting talking about it. He was in the interviews when they hired the offensive coordinator. He talks to Don Smolenski, who's head of like the business side of it. They talk about his relationship with Howie, which we'll get into in a second. But just being around the team over the past year, really 2 years, it's been no secret that Julian is more and more involved. And there's been more and more questions about when Jeffrey will retire, you know, and hand it over to Julian. So Jeffrey Lurie is currently 74. It mentions in the story that he is in Florida more and more. Apparently he's building a yacht. So sounds like he has a nice life for him waiting for there in Florida. But I also think Jeffrey is still around. It says in the story that Julian has become more visible than Lurie at team headquarters. There's some team sources that are cited as saying that everyone just views Julian Lurie as an owner, whatever his title might be. They view him as an owner, and he kind of is in a weird way an owner already. But like Jeffrey was at the OTAs. I think Jeffrey was at minicamp, if I remember correctly. I think he was. He was at the draft. So Jeffrey's still around. He's just not there every single day like he used to be. I'm sure I've said this on the pod before, but there were years where I would go to practice every day and parked outside would be Jeffrey Lurie's car. So like he used to be around every single day. Seems like he's spending more time in Florida. Look, you're 74. Go live your life. But he also said at the NFL annual meetings earlier this offseason that he can get he can be involved with Zoom. He can still be involved in things. So I still think he is running the team in a very good way. But Julian's definitely more involved. And I think it creates an element of like the four most important people, five if you want to say Big Dom, are Howie, Don Smolensky, Julian, and Jeffrey. And I think before Julian, it was Howie and Smolensky are like the key guys running the show, doing mostly everything, and then Jeffrey helps make the final decisions. Now I think there's a little bit more of an extra layer there with Julian in Julian involved. So my experience of being around Julian is he seems like a good guy. It talks in the article about how people around him like him, about how he has, it seems to have like a good moral compass. Those are my words. They weren't in the article, but like he's compassionate. He talks to people about, you know, like things they care about. So he's not just like silently moving through the building. It does say that he is a little on the quieter side. And that would be one of my main takeaways is that you can see, and I've said this on the pod before, that Julian and Jalen are close. Like that's one thing you hear about their relationship. And you can see why when you read about Julian's personality. It says that, you know, he's not super talkative. He's not like super outgoing, but he is caring. When he talks, it means something. He's very focused on the job. Like it references in there that he doesn't have a wife and kids. So he is like all in on learning about running the Eagles. And I think that's like Jalen. Now, Jalen is married, but Jalen, I think, eats, sleeps, and breathes football, right? Like he thinks about it all the time. I think he's very deliberate in what he does. Like everything is about being the best possible quarterback. It feels like Julian is trying to do everything he can to be the best possible owner. And you can see why they would get along in that way, right? Like they probably don't feel the need to talk a ton, but they also probably like the other person doesn't feel a need to talk a ton. So I think it's important that Jalen and Julian are close. Jalen, potential nickname for them. And I think for Jalen, it's smart to be close to Julian because it's pretty clear the next time they sign Jalen to a contract, whether that happens, doesn't happen, whatever, Julian will be very involved in that decision. So definitely think Julian's personality in the story seems like it would click well with Jalen. And apparently it does because they are close. So a big part of the story is about how involved Julian is in the social media videos and how he wants to kind of do like new cutting edge things. And you can see that with the Eagles video production, like the stuff they put out, the behind the scenes, essentially doing Hard Knocks every week. Like they do an unbelievable job of that. And I do think Julian has been a part in making that happen. The other thing I think, though, and this will be a difference between Julian and Jeffrey, and probably a difference between anybody that runs a team next, which it'll be Julian, but Jeffrey didn't grow up in the social media age. Jeffrey probably has actually never had a Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Like he probably doesn't have those things, right? Julian has had them probably his entire life. He probably didn't have a Facebook. I mean, he probably didn't have a MySpace, but he probably had a Facebook. I'm sure he had a Facebook. I bet he has a Twitter. He probably has an Instagram. He might even have like a TikTok, right? So I do think one difference is you can tell in the story, Julian, like it says, he thinks it's cool when Eagles fans get their tweets in the video. He wants the app to be really good for people to use. I do think there are positives to that, right? Like that is the new age. That is how people interact with the team. And I think it's smart to have an owner that cares about those things. I also think, and I can say from my personal experience, like when you react to how people are talking about you online, that's not a good thing. Right. And I wonder if Julian, just because of the age he grew up in, and he's only 31 right now, is he too online? Like, do you want the owner of the team reading tweets and being like, wow, they really want this jersey back? That's a fine example. Or man, everybody hates this guy. Should I get rid of him? And allowing public perception to dictate moves. So I think there's an interesting element to Julian, his social media use, because he's clearly very involved in it, and how that could dictate how he views things as an owner. So can't decide if I love that or hate that. There might be a little bit of conjecture here, but I think that's an interesting element of the story, is if the thing he is most involved in right now is the social part of it, how does he turn that off when he becomes the true owner? So the other interesting part I thought of the story was the relationship between Howie and Julian. And it doesn't actually reference like anything negative about their relationship. It basically says like they have a good relationship, right? But I thought the one tense-ish part of the article was talking about potential cuts in the scouting department and how Julian, I don't want to say like advocated for it, but it said that Julian kind of would question, why do we have three senior level scouts or those type of things? And how can we, for lack of a better term, like save money and be more effective? And I think that's an interesting dynamic with Howie Roseman there. Because for the past few years, and really, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, Howie's been the guy in that building. Like Jeffrey Lurie's the owner, Don Smolenski, super important as well, but he's important in a, like a different area that Howie doesn't really deal with. But Howie's kind of been able to go unchecked in that building. Like if Howie wants something done, like he gets it done. Now Jeffrey can say no, obviously, but there's been no intermediary between Jeffrey and Howie. Like you always see them together on the sidelines. Well, in the article, it doesn't directly say these people left because of Julian, but it kind of hints that maybe, or at least some people think Jake Rosenberg left because of Julian wanting to restructure. And then maybe it leads you to wonder, did Alec Hallaby and Bryce Johnson leave because of the ways that things were happening in the scouting department? Now, one source says in the article when asked, you know, if potentially losing high-level scouts, these guys leaving, maybe not spending as much in that department could impact things. It says, quote, if there's a high head count, it's hard to pull it apart and say, this is responsible for this, this is responsible for that, one said of the sources. You never know which thing, one of the sources said, you never know which thing you pull is going to be the thing that causes it to fall down, end quote. So that's a source basically, and that last part's important. You never know which thing you pull is going to be the thing that causes it to fall down. And the Eagles have been unbelievable with Howie, right? And so Jake Rosenberg leaves for something non-football related. Alec Hallaby leaves, not non-football, non-NFL related. Alec Hallaby leaves for something seemingly not football related. Bryce Johnson leaves for another team. It doesn't, again, say directly in there that it's because of Julian, but it also kind of hints at it. And so one thing I would say about the relationship, this is just my opinion. I don't have any information, to be honest, about the relationship between Howie and Julian. But Julian's kind of like the new kid on the block that's coming in and has power. And Howie, in his career, especially after what happened with Chip, I think one thing people could say that would be critical of Howie is he likes having control, right? Like, I think he's good at listening to people. I think he's gotten better at it. But Howie has built a Hall of Fame resume by being like the guy, having full control. And you wonder how Julian coming in and being able to say, hey, maybe we should do this this way. And Howie having to placate to that, how that goes, right? Like, in a way, Julian can stop Howie from doing whatever he wants. And there hasn't been that person in the building. And with Jeffrey not around as much, Howie and how his relationship with Julian works could impact how long Howie wants to be there. Like, could Howie go and save his hometown team of the Jets? I know that's a sensitive subject right now because of how much AJ loves the Patriots, but if Howie grew up a Jets fan, maybe he goes there and he tries to save the team. Maybe he goes to a different sport and runs a baseball team or a soccer team or whatever. I think Howie's done enough in Philly where if he starts to not be happy with how things are, maybe he just bounces. Now, what I would say ultimately about all this, the idea that people are leaving because of Julian, the idea that they're not paying people as much money, I find it hard to believe that Jeffrey Lurie would try to fix something that's not broken. They're operating at the highest level they ever have. So I think that is noteworthy, but that is the one tense part of the article, I think, was how is Julian and like him potentially managing how Howie controls his staff, how would that work? And so I think the relationship between Howie and Julian is important. And that was also one of my big picture takeaways from it is, you know, man, they've had it good with Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman, right? Winning 2 Super Bowls, going to 3, double digit wins, like a Super Bowl contender most of the time. And I think because of Howie's age, he's young, and because you don't really think about losing an owner, you never really think that these days could end, right? Like, they got to find a quarterback, head coach, those type of things, but they're operating at a really high level right now. And it probably won't always be like this. It wasn't like this for the Eagles, right? Like, they even with Howie went through a stretch where they weren't super competitive. So Julian, and there's something in there that I think is ultimately how I would feel about this. And this is what a team source says about Julian, quote, "If I lived in Philadelphia and I was an Eagles fan, I would feel really good about him as a steward of the franchise in the future. I really do think he cares about the team and the city and the players," end quote. And ultimately, I think that's all you can ask for. When you have someone step into a new role, you're never going to know if they'll be able to do it until they do it. There's no perfect candidate. Julian Lurie is about as close as they're going to get, right? He will get probably 5, 6, 7, 10 years of training on the job. He grew up around it. He comes from, obviously, Jeffrey Lurie, and I think he has a lot of Lurie's good qualities. So you could not ask for a better person, in my opinion, to step in. But that doesn't mean he'll be good at it. That doesn't mean when push comes to shove, he'll make the right decisions that Jeffrey Lurie made. It doesn't mean he'll manage the staff as well. It doesn't mean he'll have someone like Howie there. And if he loses Howie, how does he replace Howie? So it's a big time job. I think he's about the best you could ask for. But when you read the article and you hear like Julian kind of wants to do it this way, or he's tweaking this thing, it does make you think like, how could this potentially not work? And how good the Eagles have had it with Jeffrey and Howie, and just kind of the need to capitalize on how good they are now to get those Super Bowls, right? Like, one slipped away from them in 22. They got one back in 24. But when you have this amount of talent on defense, when you have Jalen, when you have Nick, you got to capitalize on that, because there's not always going to be this level of talent on the roster. And you're not always going to have year after year of being a contender. Now, last thing I'll say before we stop talking about the article is, this is just tea leaf reading, but, or just a theory, reckless speculating, as Hugh likes to say. The switch on offense. So it says in there, quote, "Julian watches a lot of games and has an interest in all its intricacies. He's part of the strategic meetings when it comes to personnel and scheme. He might ask why a certain draft prospect has a red flag for character concerns, for example, or why the Eagles have made certain schematic choices," sources who have been in those meetings said. "Julian has a keen eye for X's and O's and will query coaches. He often does his own research and comes prepared," a team source said. Man, so do you think Julian was involved in like making a switch on offense? He's young. He's online. He thinks he knows X's and O's. I don't know. Feels like it could be a potential spot there where, when like Jeffrey, Julian, Howie, and Nick are talking, Julian saying, "We got to evolve on offense. We got to do these cool new things I see other teams doing." Because it does feel a little out of character for the Eagles. I guess not completely. They are a team that overcorrects, but it feels out of character for Nick, I guess. So I don't know. I just thought that was a thought I had when reading the article. But overall, you definitely leave the article feeling like grateful for what Jeffrey and Howie have done, and I guess feeling good about Julian taking over one day, but also there's a risk with that. So on the other side, one question I've been asking myself a lot recently is, we spent all last year talking about how teams do the year after they win a Super Bowl, like the Super Bowl hangover. So that made me think, how do teams do when they're out of the Super Bowl hangover and when they have a full year in between? So how do they do that second year after winning the Super Bowl? So we'll get into that on the other side. But first, a word from our sponsors. Okay, so the Super Bowl hangover. The Eagles are officially past that, right? And if you've ever had a hangover, there's nothing like when you're past the hangover, right? So it's almost like Friday night, the Eagles partied, they won the Super Bowl. They dealt with the repercussions on Saturday, 2025. Probably felt like a hangover for people watching a lot of the year. Well, the good news, it's Sunday. You can get up, you can go to the gym, you feel well, right? You eat healthy and you attack the new week. Well, so that's the question. When teams win a Super Bowl, we all know the Super Bowl hangover hurts them. We saw that with the Eagles, history backs that up. How do they do after that Super Bowl hangover, the year after they've had an offseason where it was distracted by the Super Bowl, where their bodies are beat up? What does the second year look like? So I looked at the last 20 Super Bowl winners to find out how they did two seasons after. So for example, the 2023 Chiefs won the Super Bowl. In case you haven't heard, they lost in 2024. Then 2025, they missed the playoffs completely. So they are an example of the year after the Super Bowl hangover, they continued to decline. I wanted to find out how many teams went back up after the Super Bowl hangover. So The Eagles in 2024 wouldn't qualify for this because they haven't played a second season. So like I said, the 2023 Chiefs lost the Super Bowl in 24, missed the playoffs in 2025. The Chiefs in 2022 won the Super Bowl in 23, then lost the Super Bowl in 24. So they avoided the Super Bowl hangover, but then did take a step back 2 years afterwards. So I think the Chiefs are some ways a very good example of how hard it is to sustain success year over year. Probably also makes it sting that they lost in 22. The Eagles did a little more because they had a real chance there. But you've seen the Chiefs look worse each year and kind of get worse each year. So the 22 Chiefs are one of the teams that not only rebounded in that second year, but won a Super Bowl that year. The 21 Rams, they missed the playoffs in their Super Bowl hangover year with only 5 wins. That following year, they made the playoffs, they won twice as many games, and they lost in the wild card round. So didn't get back to the Super Bowl, but they had a better year in 23 than they did in 22. The COVID Buccaneers win the Super Bowl. They lose a divisional round in 21 with 13 wins. Then they lose the wild card round in 2022 with 8 wins. So they continue to decline. The 2019 Chiefs lose the Super Bowl in 2020, then lose the AFC in 2021. So they decline, but obviously we know they bounce back and continue to win Super Bowls. The 2018 Patriots lost the wild card round in 2019, missed the playoffs in 2020, the end of the Belichick and Brady era. So they were never able to get back. Well, they were last year, but with a completely new team. In 2017 Eagles, the 2017 Eagles, we all know what happened there. Won a playoff game in 18, lost a wild card round in 2019, but had 9 wins both seasons. So they really didn't get better the second year after the Super Bowl. They just kind of were the same. The 2016 Patriots, like the 22 Chiefs, lose a Super Bowl in 2017 to the Eagles, and then they won the Super Bowl in 2018. 2015 Broncos missed the playoffs in 2016, missed the playoffs in 2017. Now, it's worth noting they lost Manning after 2015, so it's a pretty big change. I'm not sure it's the best example, but they progressively got worse. And then the 2014 Patriots lost the AFC Conference Championship game in 2015, won the Super Bowl in 2016. So what do the first 10 teams teach us? Well, it's good to have Tom Brady or Patrick Mahomes, because of the 10 teams, only three of them did better the second season after, and those teams had Tom Brady and Patrick Mahomes, right? So the Rams, you know, I guess did do better, so they would count, but they have Matthew Stafford, right? So the 2014 Pats, the 2016 Pats, the 2021 Rams, and then I guess actually the 22. No, yeah, that's it. So three of the 10 teams did better the second season after. Only the 2014 Pats and 2016 Pats won the Super Bowl. So definitely, if you look at the last 10 years, it's pretty clear. You don't really get better the second season, right? You don't just bounce right back. Most teams continue to kind of decline or not able to reach that same level of success. But that's also in the Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes dynasty era, right? So let's look at the 10 teams before that. Because if you look at the Super Bowl winners during this stretch, it's the Patriots, 1-2, twice, the Chiefs 3 times, the Eagles. So like, it's a lot of repetition. Or the Patriots 3 times, the Chiefs 3 times, and then, you know, you have a little, you know, some teams get in there. But from 2013 to 2014, you had Seattle, Baltimore, the Giants, the Packers, the Steelers, the Colts, and the Patriots. So you definitely got like different, more of a not just dynasties, right? So let's look at 2013 to 2004. And we'll start with 2013 to continue, just keep going down. So Seattle wins a Super Bowl in 2013, loses a Super Bowl in 2014, loses a divisional in 2015. They decline. The 2012 Ravens missed the playoffs in 2013. They lost divisional round in 2014. So they go up, but only by 2 games and never get close to the Super Bowl. 2011 Giants, not a good example because they weren't a great team and they went on just like a run, but they were actually better, or excuse me, they get worse both seasons. 2012, they have 9 wins. 2013, they have 7 wins. The 2010 Packers win 15 games in their Super Bowl hangover year, but they lose a divisional round. And then in 2012, they lose the divisional round again. The Saints with Drew Brees lose the wild card round the season after they win the Super Bowl. They bounce back. They get to the divisional round, win 13 games. So they have an improvement, but they don't win the Super Bowl. The Steelers in 08 missed the playoffs in 09, get back to the Super Bowl, but lose it in 2010. So they're somewhat of a success story there. The Giants, the first Super Bowl, lose a divisional round in 2008, missed the playoffs in 2009, so they continue to decline. The Colts lose a divisional round in 2007, lose the wild card round in 2008, they continue to decline. The 2005 Steelers missed the playoffs in 06, so they definitely have a Super Bowl hangover year. Then they only get one, they make the playoffs in 07, but they lose in the wild card round. And then the Patriots, this is with Tom Brady, lose divisional in 05, lose the AFC Championship game in 06. So those teams of the five there, five did better. Tom Brady's Pats, Ben Roethlisberg's Steelers twice, Drew Brees' Saints, and the 2012 Ravens with Joe Flacco, right? So I think the clear indicator here, if you look at the teams that did better, Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, Matthew Stafford, Ben Roethlisberger, Drew Brees, all Hall of Fame quarterbacks. The Ravens are the only one that were able to get better, but even they didn't get back to the Super Bowl. And they would be the outlier with Joe Flacco, not to get into the like is Joe Flacco elite conversation, but that would be the one outlier. So overall, if you look at the 20 teams that the second season after the Super Bowl, how they did, only eight of the 20 teams did better the second season after a Super Bowl win than they did in their Super Bowl hangover season. So less than half. Only two of the 20 won the Super Bowl in their second season after winning the Super Bowl. And again, of the eight that did better, their quarterbacks were Brady, Mahomes, Brees, Roethlisberger, Stafford, and Flacco. So to me, it's clear. If you have a special Hall of Fame quarterback, you can do it. If you don't, you fall apart. The Colts, the Ravens, the Packers, obviously a Hall of Fame quarterback, but they never got close again. You know, the Buccaneers with Brady, old Brady, like he's not that same guy. So the two lessons, don't expect it just to get better because it's not the Super Bowl hangover year. I think when you combine the fact that they have a rookie offensive coordinator, that's going to be something to get past. But here's the deal. If Jalen is truly like a special elite Hall of Fame quarterback and he has on his way to a Hall of Fame resume, he has, I think, shown he can be special, then they can bounce back. But I think this is a big year for Jalen to show, is he like a Joe Flacco or is he a Tom Brady, Mahomes, Brees, Roethlisberger? So that's my takeaway from it. But I think overall, it certainly is not an encouraging look at how things go for the team. So that'll do it for today's Daily Go Birds. Go out, enjoy your day. Until next time, he's Elliot. I'm James. Talk to you guys later.
Go Birds! It's always amazing to see how quickly your child grows. And I'm not just talking about their height. From those early babbles to full-on storytelling, getting to watch how their ideas, creativity, and confidence develop over the years is honestly pretty incredible. Sometimes they surprise you with what they come up with, and Lego Bricks can be right there with them through all of those stages. It's not just a toy, it's a full creative building journey that keeps evolving as they do. Lego Sets Play starts as early as 1.5 with Lego Duplo, the bigger bricks designed for little hands that are just starting to explore and build. Then around age 4, kids transition to the smaller Lego bricks, and suddenly, you're watching real structures take shape, real ideas form, and their imagination really take off. They begin with simple stacking, but over time they grow into full-on creators, building worlds, stories, and things you never would have expected. That's the kind of magic of Lego bricks. You're not buying a phase, you're starting a journey. Learn more and start building today with Lego bricks.